A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 34. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Children of the Stones. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. So we're continuing to talk about Children of the Stones, a children's TV series from 1977, which came out in 7 parts, and we've already discussed the mysterious village of Milbury, surrounded by a circle of giant Neolithic stones, which some unusual powers, and the rather strange villagers who seem very calm and happy and are led by a mysterious and quite sinister figure called Raphael Hendrick. So we've met our main characters, the scientist Adam Brake and his son Matthew. They're not the only newcomers in the village, although they're the most recent arrivals. But there are some other newcomers who seem so far to have been unaffected by the happy day philosophy. As the show goes on and we see the villagers out celebrating in the blazing sunshine, we find that some more of, as it were, the sort of normal characters, the newcomers, are being converted to happy dayers, and characters who previously said that they wanted nothing to do with it suddenly start going around smiling and wishing Adam and Margaret and the children a happy day. So it's all quite strange.
It certainly is. These so-called happy dayers who always greet people with happy day are sort of lacking in personality and emotion and seem very plain in a certain way, even though they're not simple. They retain all of their abilities and so on, but they are very much without personality. And Hendrick, who seems to be leading this whole situation here, is the only one who seems to have retained his personality and his emotion and so on. Everyone else is being gradually converted over to being these sort of almost mindless people. And we also have this situation where Matthew, Adam Brake's son, has this strange painting that he had bought a year before they decided to go to Milbury. And the painting appears to be a painting of ancient Milbury, with people standing in a circle and a circle of stones, and people sort of mingling in with the stones, and a couple of people running away towards this structure called the Sanctuary. It is quite unusual and seems to have this strange impact on some of the happy day villagers, who will see it and be shocked by it or see it and faint in one case. And things like this painting seem to have this large impact unexpectedly.
Yeah, and Hendrick is fascinated by the painting when Matthew brings it into the village. And as you say, it seems to give us this idea that there's been something going on in ancient history connected with the stones, and that some of the strangeness of this village has perhaps been going on for quite some time. And sort of tied in with that is our character Matthew, who starts having strange visions of his own, which are quite bizarre. It's not clear if they're just visions or if there's something called psychometry, which is sort of like distant viewing. And again, his father, the man of science, seems to have quite an open mind about this and accept that this might be a possibility. And he needs to have some form of connection to the person he's having the visions of. So it's almost like he has to have some object or item of clothing of theirs. And if he's touching it, he starts to get these visions of what's happening to the person at a distance, which obviously helps with dealing with some of the plot and showing us some of the sort of weird and spooky things that are happening to people when Adam and Matthew aren't around.
It's quite strange that you have some of these things like this psychometry sort of remote viewing and these things that are legendary that people claim happen but you don't really see seem to be actually happening within this village. There seems to be some sort of focus that more of these things are happening. There is also this question that's gradually brought up: can anyone leave the village? We see at one point a character who says he's leaving the village, and then we find after he says that yes, he's left the village, but now he's one of the happy day people, so we're not quite sure what happened.
It's a considerable puzzle, because as you say, it's the local doctor, who's also a newcomer, who's actually been complaining that he has nothing to do because the villagers are so healthy and calm and happy, and he's quite looking forward to leaving the village to visit one of his old patients. Something happens, and the next time Adam and Matthew encounter him, he has become a happy dayer, and it's all increasingly sinister and strange. To go along with that, we have Di, this poacher character, played by Freddie Jones, who pops up again and again with sort of cryptic messages and warnings about Sanctuary. And he has in his possession what appears to be some form of amulet, a clay disc, which he regards as some form of protection for him. And he's very possessive of it and doesn't want to give it up, despite the fact that Matthew and I think Margaret in the library are quite interested in this as a piece of history. So there's lots of stuff going on, and weirdness abounds in this show.
Di seems to be the only person other than Hendrik who has been living in the village for a long time, who seems to be immune from this phenomenon of losing one's personality and becoming one of these happy day type people.
And as it all goes on, we start to get the theories coming out. You know, Adam and Matthew, particularly with Margaret and Sandra, start to discuss what could be going on. And there's various theories are coming up. A bit like we discussed when we talked about the Nightmare Man, that people's trying to explain these unusual events. And again, because we've got this very scientific background, we start to find out a little bit more about what the stones may be pointing at in the sky. And that they may, in fact, have been aligned with a supernova and even possibly with something that may have become a black hole.
That's right. And then electromagnetic energy as well, when they're talking about the stones having a magnetic field and this electromagnetic force. And they start talking about the fact that there appears to be a dish of stone beneath the circle that covers the whole town. So you have all these odd things that they're looking at scientifically and slowly putting things together. Is there some system that's at work here? It's not just, oh, there are some supernatural things happening here. There is a real sense of Adam and Matthew and sometimes others analyzing this and saying, well, is there some scientific explanation for all of this?
Absolutely. And we find out, as this is going on, we find out a bit more about the scientific background of Hendrik himself. And we find out that he knows quite a bit about what the stones may be pointing at and what this stone dish underneath the village may be aligned with. And that actually he discovered the supernova itself. So his background becomes more a part of it and contributes to this sort of growing scientific sort of explanation for some of the events that we're witnessing in the village. Hendrik is also interested in, as we've said, he's quite interested in the painting that Matthew discovered and brought with him, and an inscription on the painting, which I think is in Latin, and he sort of tests Matthew early on by getting him to translate this phrase, which is a very strange phrase, really. It sort of sets off a mystery for a while, although I don't think it's ever completely explored or explained. But the phrase translates as, "I deny the existence of that which exists," which is a very bizarre statement. And again, you know, quite a paradox to be delivering to children in their afternoon TV show just after they've got home from school.
I love that expression. It adds even another little layer to all these odd, mysterious, creepy kinds of things that are going on. And another thing that comes up in this is the concept of time, that time seems to be very important to Hendrik in keeping precise, absolute time. And in terms of how, is there something funny going on with time here? Is there something a little bit strange in this place? And the idea of time and how time passes and what happens with time is, it seems, maybe important to the village itself and important to what's happening with the stones and the supernova and the black hole and the dish below the town and all of these things. You get this quite complex and intricate series of things fitting together, and that's really quite neat.
Yes, Hendrik loves his digital clocks everywhere, doesn't he? Again, you know, and then they're a very sort of 70s feature of the show, that he has these digital clocks, which he is fanatical about and absolutely has to know the exact time.
He keeps everything in his house, which is the original manor at the center of the town, which part of the reason that he is the leader is that he lives in this historical manor. He has everything being very old and historical and sort of classic and almost ancient in some cases in his house, except these digital clocks. He has, you know, all of this old dark wood and old items, and everything there is very old and classical. except for these large digital clocks that are everywhere.
Which we have to just point out, they're fantastic 1970s digital clocks. These are the ones where the numbers sort of flipped over, where little numbers on plastic would actually flip over as the minutes progressed, which of course at the time were absolutely cutting edge, and they now look impossibly quaint and charming, and it's rather old-fashioned.
You have the top half and the bottom half, and one flips over the other. They used to be common on clocks on stoves and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it still, even now, gives you that feel of the very old-looking everything else and the much more modern digital clocks.
Yeah. And as you say, the show has got this strange approach to time, which is obviously very important to Hendrix and the village and the events in the village. And again, it keeps reminding me of other stuff, but it reminded me of a show we've also discussed, Time Slip, which obviously was very much about the effects of time. But there was some similar themes explored in The Children of the Stones. There's one other element which we haven't really mentioned yet, and again, it's another little mystery that comes up and seems to lead us down a pathway and then really perhaps doesn't go quite where we expected or isn't completely explained, and that's the mystery of this body or this skeleton that is kept in the library or in the sort of library museum by Margaret, and it's called the body of the barber surgeon who was, I believe, excavated from under one of the stones in an excavation, and is this sort of skeletal remains. And there seems to be some sort of connection suggested between the barber surgeon and Di the poacher, particularly because they both seem to have the same amulet or a similar clay disc, and fragments of this disc were found with the barber surgeon's body. And there's something going on there which is clearly important and clearly some form of, almost as you say, immunity or protection from what's happening to the villagers. But again, it's just another part of the mystery which perhaps doesn't quite get explained as we thought it would.
There seem to be all of these odd connections between things that are happening now and things that may or may not have happened in the past, and these things like the connections between the barber surgeon and Di, and there are other connections between different people for things that are happening now and things that had happened in the past. And they looked at the number of people living in the village now and the number of people who were in the painting that looked like it was Milbury that Matthew had bought, and it was the same number of people. There were all of these things in common with things from the present and things from the past. So there were some really intricate, interesting things happening in there.
And as you say, we get this, there's the same number of people as the same number of stones, and we get these little flashes where Adam and Matthew see stones which seem to briefly transform into people or vice versa. The people seem to appear as stones, and we're not quite sure if these are just sort of brief hallucinations or if something's actually happening. So that's, it again, just adds to this sort of unsettling tone of the whole thing.
What do you know about the supernova?
It's unfair. I should have introduced myself properly when we first met.
Of course. Hendrik Supernova. You discovered the black hole. Raphael Hendrik, the astronomer.
The ex-astronomer. I resigned my chair in Cambridge 5 years ago.
Yes, I always wondered why.
Because of some papers, I suppose.
May I ask what papers?
They were given to me by a colleague, written in dog Latin. A style earlier than Bede's, about 6th century. A mishmash of fact and fiction about megalithic Britain. Legends and stories handed down through the centuries, which the author had picked up. No one had ever paid much account to them.
So it takes all these different elements and it puts them out in 1977 as a children's TV drama, and it gets this reputation, which it's kept for the last 30 years, of one of the scariest kids TV shows of all time. And it keeps getting mentioned by various people as being, you know, one of the creepiest things they ever watched. And when Channel 4 television here in the UK ran a series of the 100 greatest, scariest moments of all time, Children of the Stones was in there in the top 100 with, you know, other shows like Doctor Who and other bits and pieces that we've talked about on British Invaders. But the question, in a way, is why is it so scary? Because there's no gore, there's no violence, there's no bad language. We don't really see unpleasant things happening to people, but it's very unsettling, isn't it, Brian?
It certainly is, and there are a lot of different little things that all play to it just perfectly. The performances by the actors are almost always strong. They brought off this idea of people being drained of personality and who they were very well. That was something that I think the actors made really quite convincing.
Yeah.
And the characters that were not doing that, who were different from that, like Hendrik and Di, were also very powerful and very convincing in their own ways. So that was certainly part of what made it so creepy and scary and unsettling.
I mean, you're right. I think it's this idea that people you know and get on with can suddenly be taken over and transformed and become something different and unusual. And as you say, the actors, I mean, perhaps the child actors, in a way, they find it even easier to portray that slightly emotionless, flat aspect of the Happy Dayers. Because as you say, once they do become Happy Dayers, they do it very well. And it is, keep saying it, it's just creepy.
I also like the idea that it isn't always immediately apparent to the characters that someone has switched over and lost his or her personality. It's something that sometimes they at first don't realize and then think, oh, wait a sec, that person isn't the person that they used to be.
Absolutely, yes. They give it away by saying something, or something about them changes subtly, and it takes the main characters a while to realize. And there's a couple of times in the series where that's done extremely effectively, and some of the child actors do that very well. And I think that was mentioned in the production notes on the DVD set, that a couple of the actors could just carry it off and kept on doing it even when they were off set, and just upsetting people in the production crew.
And one thing I don't think we can say enough about is the music, because it really worked very well. This choral theme that we referred to before, that was intense and dissonant and had spoken parts to it that were sometimes whispered and sometimes sort of wailed. So it became very intense and had an element of pain of what people were going through, from being regular people to losing who they were. And it was tied to the stones themselves, and it was really something that could draw you in and was very powerful indeed.
Oh, the music's fantastic, and it's really well done, and I don't want to talk about it because I just find it so unsettling when I hear the music. And this is only from having watched it recently. I didn't watch this when it first came out, so I have no memories of it. But as you say, it's a major part, I think, of its legacy and its impact it's had on a generation of TV viewers is the music. An astonishing piece to choose for a piece of children's television. So what else works well?
I actually liked the effects in this quite a bit, because they used some very simple effects and used them very well. As we discussed with the Omega Factor a few episodes ago, it used some things like crossfades and superimpositions and just these simple things to be quite powerful. And they did use some photographs in there that were sort of obviously photographs. And there were a few times when they used more obvious effects that were a little bit weaker. But they did some very powerful things with these simple effects and some sound effects and music that were, again, quite gripping and added to this overall effect that we had.
Yeah, I mean, the cross cuts or the superimpositions of the villagers on the stones, or the stones on the villagers, where they appear in the same sort of rough shape or outline, and it's done very briefly and almost subliminally, but that really works very well. As you say, it's simple but remarkably effective. It's just there for a flash, and it leaves you thinking, well, what was that? You know, what happened? So that works very well. I think, you know, as we've said, the fact that it was filmed in such bright sunlight and heat, and it seems to be this perfect idyllic British summer in a perfect village, also sort of contributes to it, because, you know, in a way it's not like the Nightmare Man we talked about, which is full of fog and classical horror setting. This is sort of bright in the bright sunlight, and yet these weird things are happening and people are being transformed and changed into something rather sinister.
It's like the perfect idyllic village summer with something wrong beneath the surface. And that's been done many times, but it worked really well here.
Yep, very wrong. Something very wrong.
Now, what didn't work as well with this show? There aren't that many things, but what do you think, Eamon? What were some of the weaknesses with this?
Well, I'd have to say that one or two of the child actors stand out for the wrong reasons. There are a couple of moments where you think, ooh, you know, I didn't like that performance terribly much. I think once they transform into Happy Dayers, it's perhaps slightly easier for them to be spooky and creepy, and it's slightly harder for them to be, you know, just appear as natural children running around doing the bits and pieces. And of course, when they're up against people like Gareth Thomas, Ian Cuthbertson and Freddie Jones, it's quite difficult for young actors, I suspect. But there are one or two moments which I think, you know, are slightly unfortunate.
Yes, I think a number of the child actors did very well, but it's a fair comment. I would also say in a weakness of a sort is that it is so complex and a little bit convoluted even that it can be a touch confusing at times. And I think for kids at the time, it must have been a little confusing at times. For me, I found because of that, I enjoyed it the second time more than I did the first time. It isn't too confusing. It isn't too bad, but there is just a touch of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard in a way to figure out what's going on. And as ever, we're trying to sort of dance around spoilers and dance around giving away the ending. But I think we certainly will say that the ending will make you think. It may not answer all the questions that are raised as the show goes on. I think that's putting it mildly, Brian.
Yes, I think that's true. There are a lot of questions that are raised, and some of them are answered. But there are a lot of things that are not answered, and the answers raise new questions. And that's something that I really enjoyed in this show. If you look on the Wikipedia page for Children of the Stones, and I would encourage you not to do that until you've seen the actual show. It has a potential explanation for exactly what happened and exactly how all of this worked. And it's presented on Wikipedia as the answer. I don't think it's the only answer, but it is an interesting potential explanation for what was happening in Children of the Stones.
It certainly, I mean, the Wikipedia page is fascinating. I'm not sure I completely understand it in the same way that I'm not sure I completely understand Children of the Stones itself. But yeah, it is a mystery. You will have to work out your own version of how it concludes, I think. Because when you watch the ending, you will want to go away and think about that a while.
And it's also something that I think you get a lot from multiple viewings. I've watched it twice now, both fairly recently. And I will definitely be watching it again because I want to see more and deal with that world and that situation more, which is, I think, a sign of a story that has been well told and a good story.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to watch it again, yes, it is a well-told story.
Now, I've wondered about the possibility of a remake of this series, and I'm thinking that this is near the top of my list of British shows that should not be remade, because I don't think a new retelling of this would be able to accomplish what they did in 1977. And I don't think they could tell a story like this on television or on mainstream film in such an open-ended way and get all of that mystery into it and give you both the resolution and non-resolution and make it just so intense and so scary.
Yeah, a remake wouldn't do it. A remake wouldn't be able to live up to the original, I don't think. And we should also mention, we've got our British Invaders Facebook group now, and there is a brief discussion on there about Children of the Stones. And we had a comment from a regular listener and correspondent, Mary, who asked whether or not anything similar could be made nowadays. And we had a discussion about that. And Paul from the Cadmium 2 podcast pointed out that it would be extremely unlikely to get anything like this made for kids' TV now because of the restrictions that they would place on the content. Because some of the stuff it was dealing with, you know, the idea of a possible cult and children being assimilated into a cult, they just wouldn't be able to get away with it anymore. And if they were going to remake it, I think they'd have exactly the same problems, that there would be so much of the original they wouldn't be allowed to do anymore.
Quod non est, similo, dissimilaque, quod est.
Which means?
Something like, I deny the existence of that which exists.
Excellent. Let's talk about the availability of the existing version and move on to our recommendations. It was, as we say, broadcast originally in 1977.
It was repeated once in the UK in 78. And as we mentioned, it was broadcast in the early 80s in the US on Nickelodeon. I don't think it has been broadcast since the early 80s. And I think it's just been those three or four original broadcasts are all that it's had.
And then we got the DVD came out in 2002, which was a region-free DVD, although it's in the PAL system. And that contains, obviously, all seven episodes. And it's got a few extras. It's got some production notes and photographs on the DVD. And it also features two interviews, one with the director, Peter Graham Scott, and one with Gareth Thomas Blake himself. So they're quite useful. As ever, you shouldn't watch the interviews or production notes until after you've watched the series, because there are a few spoilers in there. And certainly in the UK, that's... DVD is readily available. It's still in stock, and on Amazon, it's, again, I think it's under a fiver. So it's a real bargain in the UK.
Now, we said that that's a region zero or a region free title, and because it's in the PAL system, it will play on some North American region one DVD players, but not on others. Some like that different resolution and will just play it, and others don't. It turns out that almost all software DVD players that you run on a computer will play that, even when they're region one systems. They will play that region zero, region free PAL title. But there is a Region 1 version coming out in the US that is available for pre-order on Amazon.com. It comes out in January 2009, and Amazon.com is listing it for $22.49 right now. It sounds like it has the same features on it, but from the listing that I saw, it looks like it's 13 minutes shorter, and I'm not entirely sure about that. It may be that it's edited into one long film, so you don't have the overlap between episodes. That could account for almost 13 minutes. In this case, it isn't exactly clear why that is, if there's some footage that's actually missing or not.
Which I guess leads us to our recommendations as to whether or not you should buy or rent The Children of the Stones. Brian?
I will give a solid yes for this. Children of the Stones is a great little series. It is solidly put together. It's very enjoyable. It's dark and creepy and intense and pushes all of the right buttons if that's the sort of thing you like. But at the same time, it's for children and it works very well for adults and gives you a really good, solid series that will have you thinking about it for quite a while.
Yeah, it's going to be a double recommendation for British Invaders on this this series. We're both obviously very impressed by Children of the Stones. It's a piece of British TV history. It's almost inexplicably scary. And particularly if you're in the UK, it's extremely cheap and easy to get hold of. So I would say get a copy. It's well worth it.
So, in summary, Children of the Stones was a late 1970s children's TV serial that was involved and scary and creepy and told this story of a man and his son coming to this town of Milbury that is surrounded by these large standing stones that somehow seem to have some kind of power over the people inside, because most of the people who live there are lacking in personality and seem to be drained of who they are. And it builds to all sorts of interesting things and a complex conclusion that asks questions as well as answering them.
It's absolutely worth getting hold of and seeing. It's a fantastic piece of television. So next time on British Invaders, we'll be discussing a Channel 4 TV show called Spaced, which is a comedy show with some elements of science fiction and other genre stuff, and is well known for being the sort of launching point for the careers of Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, and Nick Frost. So I look forward to that. It'll be a slice of fried gold.
Yes, that will be our first time talking about something that isn't exactly science fiction, but is about science fiction and has lots of homage in it and is really fun and is a sort of sci-fi geek candy. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. You can also find us on Facebook. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find some discussions going on there, including some about Children of the Stones.
And when you hear this, we will be putting up a discussion about Spaced. And again, thanks to Mary and to Paul and the guys from Cadmium 2 for helping us kick off the discussions on the Facebook group. Do come and join us there.
So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada saying happy day.
And happy day from Eamon in England.